Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, featuring programs from radio's golden years. Mark Levonier, your host for this hour of radio horror. Later on, it's Murder at Midnight from 1946, but right now Inner Sanctum presents the story The Vengeful Corpse, with an all-star cast featuring Everett Sloan, Barbara Weeks, and Carl Swenson. Paul McGrath, our host from September 12, 1949 on CBS.
Seltzer invites you through the creaking door for another Inner Sanctum mystery and reminds you to
welcome you through the creaking door into the inner sanctum. Come in, won't you? I'd like you to meet some new guests we've just dug up. Now, that peculiar cadaver standing off the corner by himself has a serious case of claustrophobia. Mm-hmm. Poor stiff, he just can't stand shrouds. Now, this fellow to your right was a mountain climber in life. He took his wife on an alpine hike, and while they were going up an icy slope, he cut the rope that held them together. Said he just couldn't stand being tied to one woman. And now, meet our most forgettable character, Wild-Eyed Willie. One day, Willie's ugly wife bit him. So, in anger, he buried her in the backyard. 6 months later, his homely mate came up as a dogwood tree to haunt him. Now, according to Willie, her bark is much worse than her bite.
Tonight's Inner Sanctum mystery, The Vengeful Corpse, was written by Ed Adamson and Bob Sloan and stars Barbara Weeks in the role of Sarah with Carl Swenson as Paul. Inner Sanctum is presented by the Emerson Drug Company of Baltimore, Maryland, makers of Bromo Seltzer. Remember, Bromo Seltzer is compounded by registered pharmacists. It fights headache three ways.
Bromo Seltzer helps your headache quickly, pleasantly, and it also soothes the upset stomach and jangled nerves that may team up with it.
No wonder druggists report that of all headache products dispensed to their fountains, the overwhelming favorite is Bromo Seltzer.
Please, friend, absolute silence. We want it so quiet you can hear a head drop. Chill evening wind stirs the leafless trees with a complaining murmur. A blood-red moon probes through the branches with grotesque fingers, touching the faded headstones with their eerie light. The frail, drawn-faced young woman sits on an old stone bench, listening acutely to the rustling of the branches, as if to capture some word whisper of the dead, forgotten past.
Sarah! Sarah! Sarah, where are you?
Oh, Paul, I'm here, over here.
Sarah, I've been looking all over for you. What are you doing out here anyway?
I was called out here, Paul.
What?
The wind. There was a voice on the wind, and it called me to come out here.
That's just in your mind, darling. No voice called you.
Yes, Paul, it did. I recognized the voice.
You recognized it? Then whose voice was it, dear?
It was old and tired and sort of cracked. And yet I could recognize it as my own voice.
You heard your own voice?
Yes, Paul. And it was strongest right here where I'm sitting now, among my family graves.
Hello!
It's just Mr. Griffin, the caretaker. I asked him to help me look for you.
Oh, well, I see you found your wife all right, eh, Mr. Teton?
Yes, I found her, Mr. Griffin. Mm.
I thought I saw Mrs. Teton come to the graveyard here earlier. I didn't expect she'd still be...
Oh, well, what's wrong? What's the matter, Mr. Griffin?
Just that I get sort of a funny kind of feeling every time I pass this grave here.
What do you mean? What are you talking about?
That grave, that one there, the one right next to you.
Why? What's the matter with us?
Well, ain't you noticed there's only one name on the headstone? The first name, Hester.
That's strange. My family name is Randolph. Wasn't this woman a Randolph?
Oh, you don't know the story?
What story are you talking about?
The kin who buried this Hester woman didn't think she deserved the family name, so they left it off the headstone.
Why? Why didn't they give Hester her full name?
Because they didn't want anybody to know who she was, I guess. You see, Hester was burned at the stake for witchcraft.
Witchcraft?
That's what they say.
Mr. Griffin, my wife is an ill woman as it is.
Let him go on, Paul.
No, but Sarah...
What else, Mr. Griffin?
Well, that's all, Mrs. Seaton, except that Hester claimed at the stake that they were burning an innocent woman. She could be heard shouting it as the flames licked around her. She threatened with her last breath to get even someday.
How could she get even?
I don't know, but according to the story I heard, Hester said that this here town owed her the years of her life that they took away.
Well, now, this is completely ridiculous. It's only a legend.
Mr. Griffin, tell me, how many years ago did all this happen?
Well, it's right here on the headstone, you see. Hester, a lost soul, born October 13th, 1759, died... Good heavens.
What's wrong?
Look, Mrs. Seaton, the date of Hester's death, it's worn away.
Sarah?
Yes, Paul?
What are you doing out of bed? When'd you get up?
Why, just a minute ago. I can't sleep. She keeps calling me. I hear her voice right here in this room. Just a few minutes ago.
What?
She was begging me to help her, telling me she never really lived and pleading with me to bring her back to life.
Sarah.
I thought I saw her.
No, Sarah, believe me.
She was dressed in a black dress, and there was a large W on it. That's the witch. And in her hand, she held a flaming torch.
I'm going to call the doctor, darling. This is not...
Someone's at the door.
All right, I'll see who it is.
No, wait. I'll go.
Good evening, Mrs. Seaton.
Why, Judge Foster.
I hope I didn't awaken you folks. I saw a light in the windows.
Oh, that's all right, Judge. Come right in.
Thank you. Sorry to bother you this time of the night, Mr. Seaton, but I was looking out of my window on the other side of the cemetery, and I thought I saw something or someone prowling around out there, and I wondered if they come over this way.
Who was it?
Oh, I don't know. Someone carrying a torch.
A torch?
Go on, Judge.
Well, of course, it could be that my eyes were playing tricks on me. They're not so good. But as far as I could make out, it was a woman dressed in black.
Paul.
You saw this woman, Judge? You're sure?
Well, I'm pretty sure I saw her. Of course, it's kind of dark out there, but it looked to me like there was something on the front of her dress.
What do you mean?
Well, there was the letter W. A big white letter W on it.
It was Hester, just as
I... No, Sarah.
Hester? Who's Hester?
Hester Randolph. That's who you saw. She was in this house,
no,
too.
No, it must be a trick. You see, someone is trying to frighten you, to make you worse.
Now, hold on, folks. Hester Randolph was buried over 100 years ago.
She's come back to life.
Mrs. Seaton.
Judge, my wife is ill. She doesn't realize what she's saying.
I know Hester's alive. You didn't believe me, Paul, but Judge Foster saw her, too.
Well, I didn't see anybody who's been dead 100 years...
What is it, Judge?
Don't you smell it?
Yes.
Something burning.
It's the odor of burning flesh.
Look, out there on the back lawn, stuck in the earth, a torch, a flaming torch.
Sarah, I tell you, it's useless to have me dig up this grave.
I've got to know, Paul. It's the only way I'll be sure.
Now, careful, Mr. Seaton. You're just about deep enough for the coffin now, if it's still there.
Judge, I don't know how you can sanction a thing like this.
Well, Mr. Seaton, you see, I want to be sure, too.
But it's ridiculous.
You've struck wood with the shovel. Yes, it's the coffin, all right. You better go easy now. That wood is soft with age and half rotted away.
I think we can open it now.
Wait, I'll give you a hand with the lid.
There's something inside it.
The body. Charred.
It's a body, all right. Only it isn't a woman's.
You can still make out the face. It's Griffin, the caretaker.
Dr. Norton, I am so glad that you've gotten here.
I came as soon as I could, Mr. Seaton. What's wrong?
She's worse, Doctor.
Oh?
Much worse. Been in her room all day, hiding like a frightened child. I think the reading made her worse.
Reading? What reading?
Well, for the past few days, she's been reading books about her family history.
Why did you let her have them?
Well, because at first, they seemed to quiet her. Since the night we found Mr. Griffin's body in that grave, she's wanted to know more and more about Hester Randolph.
Paul.
Oh, Sarah. Dr. Norton's here, dear.
You've got to warn him, Paul, before it's too late.
Warn who, Mrs. Seaton?
Judge Foster. He's in danger. Hester will kill him next.
What?
It's in the records of the court. The magistrate who sentenced Hester to death at the stake was a man named Foster.
Now, Mrs. Seaton, you're just upset.
Please, believe me. Judge Foster is a direct descendant of that magistrate.
Sarah, Hester's dead, dear. The dead can do no harm.
Oh, Paul, you don't understand. She's killed one man already, and now she's going to kill another. She swore she'd get that revenge on the magistrate and on the man who was her accuser.
Mrs. Seaton, all this took place over 100 years ago.
Then what about Mr. Griffin?
Well, what do you mean, Sarah?
He had the same name, too. According to the record, Hester's accuser was a man named Richard Griffin.
So, Judge Foster, my wife insisted that I come over here and warn you about Hester.
Well, thank you, Mr. Seaton, for troubling, but I'm not a bit worried about the similarity of names.
Well, I didn't admit it to Sarah, but the coincidence with Griffin was strange.
Well, the dead never frightened me, Mr. Seaton. But thank you for coming over. Oh, by the way, can I drive you home?
No, thanks. Dr. Norton is waiting for me outside. Good night.
Good night, Mr. Seaton. Now, where did I put those glasses of mine? Sure, I left them here on the table. Wait. Say, who opened that door? Is that you come back, Mr. Seaton? But confound it, whoever it is, answer me. Who's out there? Who is it?
It's me, you corrupter of justice.
What? Who are you?
Your conscience has been dimmed by the evil of your acts. Who am I? Mark you well this torch I light. Now mark you also my God. This black garment I wear and upon which you have impressed the wicked Miss W.
Hester.
I, Satan's magistrate, Hester Randolph.
That Hester character. You know, that's the way a dame gets when she's burned up. Makes a specter of herself. You know, folks, I kind of feel sorry for old Judge Foster. When Hester showed up, the poor guy didn't know which way to turn. To turn away which. They should have believed Sarah Seaton. She sure had Hester dead, or rather alive, to ride. Yes, indeed, it's a wise descendant who knows her own forebears, particularly the grave-minded one. Well, now, let's get back to our flaming fable. See what's cooking for the next stanza.
Paul. Paul, wake up.
Mm.
Paul, please, wake up.
Oh, Sarah. What's the matter, darling?
I've just had a terrible dream. I'm afraid.
No.
I dreamt that Judge Foster was killed tonight by Hester. You did warn Judge Foster, didn't you, Paul?
Yes, of course, Sarah. Where are you going, dear?
I'm getting dressed. I'm going down to tell the judge myself.
You are staying here.
Oh, please, let me go. It means a man's life.
You heard what Dr. Norton said, dear. Under no circumstances are you to leave the house. You're to talk to no one.
Why am I being kept here like a prisoner? Why don't you let me speak to... Oh, what was that?
It sounded like a door banging in the wind. Yes. There it is again.
In the rear of the house. Didn't you lock that back door?
Mm-hmm. I'm sure I did. I'd better see what happened.
Wait, I'm going with you. I'd better turn on a light here in the kitchen.
No, you won't have to. I can see the door all right. Guess I must have forgotten to spring the latch stand.
Paul!
Cyril.
Out there, by the trees at the end of the lawn. I thought I saw a figure.
All right, you stay here, dear. I'll be right back. No one out here, Sarah.
You sure?
Positive. Probably just a shadow. Standing here, Sheriff. Right here at the back door when I heard her scream.
And there wasn't a sign of her when you got back here at the door?
Not a sign of her.
Well, folks just don't vanish into thin air, Mr. Seaton. She must be around here someplace.
I got to find her before it's too late.
Too late? What do you mean by that?
I don't know, really. I have a feeling that...
Oh, now you're not going to tell me about dead witches returning too, are you? Don't tell me you believe in that stuff.
I don't know what to believe.
Sheriff, is that you, Sheriff?
Yes, who's there?
Dr. Norton.
You'd better come with me, Sheriff. I just discovered something on the side of the road, about a mile away. Mr. Seaton, I think you'd better wait here.
What is it, Dr. Norton? What have you found?
I'd rather you'd wait, as I said before, until we're sure.
What are you trying to hide from me?
I guess you better speak up, Doctor. If it's something that concerns Mr. Seaton, maybe he should know.
All right, Sheriff. But I made the turn into the road. My headlights caught it in a ditch. I wasn't sure at first, so I stopped the car and got out. There was a body in the ditch. A charred body. This way, Sheriff. Over here to the right.
Where is she?
Easy now, Mr. Seaton.
Right here, Sheriff.
Oh, wait, I'll switch on the flashlight. There.
Sarah.
Wait. Just a moment, Mr. Seaton. Dr. Norton has made a mistake.
What?
This corpse isn't your wife. I can tell by that ring. It's the ring that Judge Foster always wore.
Oh, yes, Sheriff. Any news yet? Well, why can't your men find her? It's been 6 hours already. No, I haven't heard a word. Yes. Please call me as soon as you hear anything, will you? Who's there? Who is it?
Oh, open the door. Hurry.
Sarah!
Yes, quick, let me in.
Oh, Sarah, thank the Lord you're all right. Darling, where have you been? What happened to you?
Wait, lock the door quickly.
But you...
She doesn't know I've come back. She's still looking for
Who?
Me. Hester. She was out there, Paul. That's why I ran from the house. She called to me from the road, made me go with her.
Go where?
To the cemetery. She kept me there, torturing me, begging me to change places with her.
Darling, you're not making sense.
Please, believe me. We've got to get away from here tonight. Right now. She'll kill me if we don't. She wants my life for the one she never lived.
Now, stop it. Stop. Now, get hold of yourself. There is no such woman as Hester Randolph.
But I saw her. I spoke to her.
But the woman you saw is somebody else, somebody living, who wants you to believe that she's Hester. She wants everybody to believe it.
But why, Paul? Why?
Because she's a cold-blooded murderess. She's killed 2 people already, and she's trying to drive you out of your mind completely.
Then who? Who could it be?
I wasn't sure before. Now I'm almost positive. It's Dr. Norton.
Dr. Norton?
Now, you saw this Hester, Sarah. What was she like?
Like a ghost.
Hmm?
Like a shadow in the light. You can see her face, and yet you can see through it, beyond.
No. That was just an illusion created by the night, dear.
Oh.
And perhaps some other tricks of a clever, scheming woman. You'll see. I'll prove that Dr. Norton is...
Oh,
the back door. It's blown open again.
Leave it. We've got to get out of here.
No, no, you stay here. I'm going to see who opened that door.
Please hurry. Don't leave me alone so long. Please, not in a moment. Paul!
What is it, Sarah?
Don't come in here. Don't come back. Run away as fast as you can.
What's the matter?
Don't come in here. Leave here. Yes,
sir. Sarah!
I killed Hester. She came toward me and I fired.
Sarah, there's no one in this room, dear.
Over there. In the hall. She's there.
Where? I don't see her. Good Lord, you've broken the mirror.
What?
You shot it yourself.
No. It can't be. I can't be her. And yet I saw her face.
But it was my face, too.
Sarah, it was you. You all the time.
I am Hester, fair gentleman. It is warming to have such a friend as you to stand beside me in this mockery of justice.
Oh, Sarah.
Run! Run as fast as you can, Paul. I was wrong. I haven't killed her. Run!
Sarah, I've got to help you. I've got to explain to you that
you're... But I'm not Sarah. Not anymore. Can't you see who I am? Can't you see who's taken my place?
Sarah, listen to me. I love you. Please, please, come back to me.
Sarah's gone. Now I can live the years they took from me.
Sarah!
See in my hand this pistol? He will bid as I say. He will come with me.
Still no answer, Sheriff.
No answer, Dr. Norton. I can't understand it. Mr. Seaton was home when I called just 15 minutes ago.
I warned you, Sheriff, to have that house closely watched.
Well, I can't do 100 things at once. I've got every available deputy out looking for Mrs. Seaton.
Don't you realize she may have gone back to their house? Don't you realize that she's the one who might be Hester?
Mrs. Seaton? Hester? What the deuce are you talking about?
I'm talking about dual personality. Mrs. Seaton is suffering from a nervous breakdown. And it's entirely possible that she's the one who killed Griffin and Judge Foster.
Why, you should have told me this before, Doctor. Come on, we're getting right over to the Seaton house.
Here, Paul. They buried Hester's body here. Dishonored and unnamed. But, Paul, you believe in my innocence?
Yes, Sarah. We better go back, dear.
Back?
Just to the house. Very cold here.
It's cold everywhere, Paul. I feel the chill of death coming near me. You and I are going back. Back through time. To an age where no one can harm us. This torch, I hold, will free us forever.
No, wait. Now, Sarah, please, listen. Now, try to understand, dear. You...
Heal your mind, the flames will be of no pain. I know, because I've been through such a death before.
No. Now, Sarah, wait. You...
Paul. Paul. This is going.
Oh,
Mr. Seaton, Sarah. Are you all right?
Yes.
Looks like we got here just in time.
Oh. She's crying for me. Forever.
Oh, Sarah.
She's dead, Mr. Seaton.
I'm sorry, Mr. Seaton.
Sheriff,
what is it? What's the matter?
Look, the headstone. I didn't notice that before. It's been recut.
Oh, what do you mean?
Don't you see what it says? Hester Randolph, a lost soul. Born October 13, 1759. Died September 12th,
1949. Say, have you had your personality split lately? You see what happens when a dame gets her dates mixed up? Poor Hester. She didn't know whether she was coming or going to the grave. Now, look, if you should be in an old New England cemetery some night and one of the headstones should move, don't be frightened. It's probably just Hester coming up for a hot date again. Oh, by the way, there's no parting moral attached to tonight's tale. I'll just leave you with your own thoughts. As horrible as I hope they are. Time to close that squeaking door for another 7-day rest until next week at this time. Good night. Pleasant dreams.
This is Dwight Weiss inviting you to tune in again next Monday at the same time to Inner Sanctum.
Inner Sanctum, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 12th of September, 1949 on CBS. You're listening to An Hour of Horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Next, Future Suspense radio show director Anton M. Leder directs Murder at Midnight, bringing us the story Till Death Do Us Part from July 12th, 1946.
Under my hands, throbbing.
No, Frank, you're hurting me. You're choking me. No!
Midnight, the witching hour when the night is darkest, our fears the strongest, and our strength at its lowest ebb. Midnight, when the graves gape open and death strikes. How? You'll learn the answer in just a minute in Till Death Do Us Part. And now, Murder at Midnight. Tales of mystery and terror by radio's masters of the macabre. Our story by Joseph Ruskell is Till Death Do Us Part.
Wistful eye upon that little tint of blue which prisoners call the sky.
Ruth, I want to tell you something. Put down that book and listen. I love you.
Some love too little, some too long. Some sell and others buy. Some do the deed with many tears and some without a sigh.
Do you hear me, Ruth? I love you.
Some do it with a bitter look. Some with a flattering word.
Professor Clark.
Yes, Professor Clark.
Love me, darling.
Wildly?
Put the book away. Almost there now. Bridal suite waiting.
Oh, Frank. Promise you'll always love me.
Till death do us part.
Another glass, darling. Come on.
It's sweet to dance to violins when love and life are fair. To dance to flutes. To dance to lutes is delicate and rare.
But it is not so sweet with nimble feet to...
To dance upon the air. Frank.
Darling.
You've hardly kissed me. Why are you looking at me like that?
You're so lovely.
Come over here to the couch. A shy bridegroom in this day and age? Darling, why are you acting so strangely? Well, if the mountain won't come to Mohammed... Come here, my lord and master. Kiss me.
Oh, Ruth, I love you so much.
Darling, why do you keep staring at me like that? Frank.
Ruth, no.
Darling, what's the matter?
I don't know.
Please, Frank, after all.
No, don't come near me. Don't touch me. Ruth, something terrible is happening to me. It's a feeling. It's too dreadful to believe.
What is it?
When I take you in my arms, when I kiss you, I love you and I want you so that I feel a hideous urge to...
To what, darling?
To strangle you to death.
Shaving. Finishing up now. Morning, Professor.
Morning, Professor. Life is wonderful.
Wonderful.
Tall?
Thank you.
Leave us enter the parlor, husband.
Yes. Leave us eat, my bride. Ah! What feast is this that tempts me palate? Fall to, spouse. Citrus! My favorite ice squirt.
I'm so happy. I feel like dancing.
It's sweet to dance to violin.
Yeah, that's right. How's it go? It's sweet to dance to violin.
When love and life are fair. Eat, dear. What's wrong?
I guess I'm not very hungry.
Frank, you're thinking of that incident last night again. You are, aren't you?
How could I have said that to you? I can't understand it. What got into me?
Now, darling, you're to forget it. Don't talk about it anymore. Don't even think of it. It was just your little joke.
Some joke. Wonder I didn't frighten you to death.
Well...
The funny thing is, the next minute I was laughing at myself, and so were you. But when I said it, I... Ruth, I can't explain it. I can't eat now.
Frank.
It was like an obsession. Yes, that's it. It was an obsession. Ruth, you're a psychologist. What does it mean? To have felt that horrible urge to do that to you. To you, I must have been mad.
Now, darling, don't say that. Don't spoil our honeymoon with this nonsense. You'll be talking things into yourself. I don't know what it is. Your nerves are on edge from your accident, that terrible crash just 3 months ago.
Please, Ruth, please, I don't want to think about it. I can still see it, that horrible, twisted wreck.
Well, you're lucky you're alive. Be thankful, I am.
She was hitting 80, showing off. I couldn't stop her, that daffy little sister of yours.
Darling.
I'm sorry, dear. Sorry. I dare say I felt as awful about it as you did. Brilliant student, could have been one of my best if she'd ever opened a book. The poor kid, what a way to die. Maybe if I hadn't accepted a lift of town, who knows, she might still
now,
be...
Now, please, please, darling. Let's forget it. It's not good for you. You haven't been at all yourself ever since then.
No, I haven't. Have I?
Well, everything has its compensation, dear. After all, that's what brought us together. Closely, I mean.
Yes, that's right. In the hospital, you were an angel.
Oh.
Well, you were just an angel from heaven, the way you helped to nurse me through all that time when I was only half conscious. Nursed me and read to me. Read to me. Yes. The way you read to me.
Why do you say it like that, Frank?
Well, I don't know. There's something you read to me over and over when I was barely conscious. I've heard it ever since, deep down. I can't seem to recall it, but I feel that it had something to do with my crazy behavior last night. A line. It's still with me. It never seems to leave me. Seems to make me want to do something horrible.
Now, Frank, stop talking. You're ill again. You're pale as a ghost.
What is that line? I've got to know.
Please, darling, please, stop shouting. I'm with you. Your love is with you. Now kiss me, dear. Hold me tight.
Oh, so lovely. Everything about you. Your eyes, your lips, your lovely white throat. I feel it pulsing. I can feel your throat pulsing, darling, in my hands. Pulsing.
No, Frank. You're hurting me. Oh, you're choking me. No!
Yes, sir?
I'm checking out. Room number 438. Call me a cab.
From the bridal suite? Well,
just a moment. There's something wrong, sir. You and your wife just checked in last night. Any complaint?
No, no complaint. Just call me a cab.
Oh, an emergency.
What business is it of yours? Where's another hotel?
Why, you'll find it very difficult in New York without a reservation. And if you and your wife...
I'm checking out. Who said anything about my wife? She's better off without me, do you hear? Well, what are you gawking at? She's very lovely, remember? Would she make a nice corpse in a bridal suite? Oh, go to the devil.
Where to now, mister? Where now?
Just shake off that other cab.
I did, 3 hours ago. I told you 10 times. What now?
Just drive around the park.
We've been around and around and around. How long can this go on?
That line. What was that line? What was it?
Huh?
What was that line?
Look, pal, we going over that again, too. What line? You want the 7th Avenue line? If I'm not talking out of turn, Bob, you must have lifted quite a few today.
Get me to a hotel.
We tried a dozen. Remember, they're full up. Hey, just who are you, mister? What's your racket?
What's that to you?
Okay, I just asked.
I was a teacher, cabbie, in a woman's college. But that's only a blind. My name is Jack the Ripper, see? But some people just call me Bluebeard.
Bluebeard? Huh? This is the end of my line, chum. Pay up and get out.
No, I won't. You can't make me get out. You can't.
I can't, huh?
No, because if I do get out, I may go back. And if I go back, don't you understand? I'll kill her.
For richer or poorer, in sickness and in health, till death do us part. A bridegroom, dazed and obsessed, standing on a city street, fearing to return to his bride, because he knows if he does, it will mean
murder at
midnight. Sir, my name is Bluebeard. You're the proprietor of this charming boarding house.
You're drunk.
Forsooth, 'tis true. May I tarry the night?
No vacancies. Go on now, get on your way.
Where's his room?
Top floor, rear, Mrs. Clark. He came in about an hour ago, drunk as you please, and he asked for a single. I'm not one to rent to drunks, mind you, but I can see he's really educated and a gentleman, though a queer one, if you ask me, with his eyes all bloodshot. Well, here it is.
Did he say when he'll be back?
He said he was going for his bags.
I'll just wait in his room, if you don't mind.
Hmm.
It's all right. I'm his wife, I tell you.
I don't know. Something mighty fishy about all this. Well, excuse me. There's the hall phone. It's not one thing, it's another. All right. Hello? Yes? Who? Oh, just a minute. It's him, ma'am. He wants to talk to the lady who just came in.
Let me speak to him. Hello, Frank.
I saw you go in. What are you doing in my house?
Darling, it's so good to hear your voice again. I was so worried.
Answer me. What are you doing there? How did you know where to find me?
I've been following you everywhere. I don't want you to leave me, darling. I love you.
Get out of there. Stop haunting me. I'm no good for you. Haven't you had enough? Go away.
I won't. You need me. I'm your wife. Come back to me, Frank.
Come back? How can you still want me? What are you inviting? Why don't you take a train home? Do you want to delay? You know I'll kill you the next time we're alone. You know I've gone mad.
Now, don't say that. You're just ill, and I'll nurse you back to health. Oh, Frank, this is your wife talking. What sort of spineless thing do you suppose you've married? What would you have me do, run to the police and ask them to protect me from my husband? Run to the police and cry that the man I love wants to kill me? Run to the police and
tell them... Yes, that's right. Of course. Why didn't I think of that before?
No, Frank. Frank! Frank, what are you going to do?
Have a seat, Mrs. Clark.
What is it you want of me, Inspector Wade? Why was I called here to the police station?
You've no idea?
No. Oh, is he here, my husband? He told you?
But I thought he was just drunk.
Oh, I told him not to come here. I told him not to.
Then it's all true? This beats anything I've ever heard. Man loves wife so much, he wants to strangle her. Kisses her. Gets an irresistible yen to choke her to death, and on their honeymoon. You want to prefer charges?
Prefer charges? What for?
Well, attempted homicide ought to cover it.
I won't. He's my husband. I love him. I'll stick by him no matter what.
But he ought to at least be sent to Bellevue for a mental...
Oh, no, you won't. There's nothing mentally wrong with Frank. Nothing at all. It's simply nerves, the result of an accident he had recently.
This really takes the cake. Mrs. Clark, another thing that puzzles me.
Yes?
He kept raving about a line when he staggered in here, as if it were life or death. A line of poetry he couldn't remember. Wanted me to tell him what it was. Confidentially, I've only read one poem in my life. Now, what's that all about?
I haven't the vaguest notion, Inspector. Just part of his neurotic state, I suppose. When we get back to our hotel room...
What? You want him back after what happened?
Yes. Don't you see, I must cure him of that awful obsession. Who else can do it but me? I'd like to see him now, Inspector. Please release him to me. I'll take the consequences.
He's not here.
Not here?
No. We held him overnight just to let him sober up like we would any other drunk. Thought it was just all boozy eyewash. This morning he seemed a new man and laughed it all off. So we released him. Just a few minutes ago.
Oh, wonderful.
But then I had a hunch. I ought to warn you anyway. Just a hunch.
Warn me?
Yeah. He said he was going to call on you tonight at the hotel for a little reunion.
Oh, how marvelous. Maybe he's all cured.
I don't know. I didn't like the way he smiled when he said it. Mrs. Clark, after what you just told me, I think I ought to have him picked up again.
You'll do no such thing.
It's taking your life in your hands. I think he's got wheels in his head.
I don't care. I love him.
You die just as dead when you're in love.
I'm not afraid. I'll never leave him. Certainly not now when he needs me more than ever. Is that all, Inspector?
Okay, lady. You're 14 carat. He sure doesn't deserve a wife like you. And don't say I didn't warn you. It's your funeral.
Thank you, Inspector. Goodbye.
Oh, Mrs. Clark, there's one more thing perhaps I ought to tell you.
Yes?
When I released him just a while ago, he said something else that puzzled me. That being in jail had suddenly given him revelation. He smiled very queerly when he said it.
Oh?
I think maybe he found that line of poetry, Mrs. Clark.
Hello?
Ruth?
Where are you, Frank?
In the lobby.
Come up.
I don't know exactly what your game is, my sweet bride. I'm warning you. I've had a revelation.
I know. It's high time.
I'm going to finish it, Ruth, this time. You asked for it.
Come up, Frank.
Sure?
Sure. Coward does it with a kiss. Come in, Frank. The door's open.
Throwing a party, my dear?
Yes.
Who's invited?
You and I.
What are we celebrating?
An uninvited guest at our honeymoon.
Death has come with you, hasn't it, this time?
Yes.
Shall we drink to him?
Why not?
Do you still love me, Frank?
Yes, I still love you. But I love you better when you're dead for what you've done.
How much do you know?
Not enough. It came to me in jail last night. The jail had something to do with it. How, I still don't know, but enough to make me remember something you whispered in the hospital when I was just coming to. You said, I'll get my revenge, Frank. Do you hear me? I'll get my revenge.
Splendid. A for memory. What else?
Enough to make me realize that you hate me and have always hated me, although you pretended otherwise.
Brilliant. Say loved and hated you. Go on.
And that somehow, I don't know myself in what way, but I'm sure it must be a very clever way, as your psychology students would agree, you've been coldly, deliberately torturing me, trying to make me think myself a maniac, or have others think so.
Close enough.
Why, what I can't understand is why you did it, or why you weren't afraid that I'd really murder you.
You'll soon find out.
And I'm convinced now that you've done it all with a single line. A single line. Poetry. In my jail cell, I was sure of it. The very walls seemed to tell me, I don't know why, that it was a line that you kept reading to me at the hospital, over and over and over again, that made me think I wanted to kill you.
And what was that line?
That's what I'm going to find out right now.
Don't come any closer, Professor.
Well, no, it's perfectly ridiculous. Looking at you now, close to you, where I can almost touch you. That crazy obsession is still with me. I laugh at it intellectually. I know that you've tricked me into it by some very obvious power of suggestion, but I still feel that way.
Don't come any nearer. I'm warning you.
Isn't it eerie? I still love you and can strangle you for my love. And will.
Stay where you are. You're not going to kill me, darling. I'm going to kill you. Now, do you see why I wasn't afraid of you?
That gun. You've had it all the time.
Correct, my love. Right here in the wine table drawer. I've planned this all along, Angel. From the very first. Before we were even married. Yes, your intuition was right. From the day you and my little sister were brought to the hospital after the accident. From the day she died. And the doctor said you'd pull through. I planned it all. And it's worked out like a perfect equation every step of the way.
Why? Why?
I had to commit the perfect crime, and I've done it. Even the police will testify that it was self-defense against a homicidal maniac. And when they find you here with a bullet in your head, they'll congratulate me.
But what's this? I still don't understand.
It had to be the perfect crime because I must go free. You see, one life has already paid for yours. And quart for quart, your blood is worth no more than my family's.
I don't understand this at all. What did I ever do?
You killed my sister.
I killed her?
She told me before she left on that drive with you that she was going to crash the car. She left before I could stop her. She told me everything, Frank, including what you'd done to her.
Everything. I see. So that's it. Well, I don't suppose it would be of any use my trying to convince
you. No use. I've waited a long time for this moment. Revenge is sweet. And it was such fun to torture you. I used a weapon I knew. Of course, it was power of suggestion. Sure, you guessed it. But what a pity you don't know the line yet.
What was it? What was it? Tell me. Tell me, don't keep me in torture.
Get back. Think hard, Frank. Think all around it. What about a jail and the revelation it gave you? What about a famous poet who wrote a famous poem while in jail?
Why?
Yes, yes.
Oscar Wilde, that's it. Yes, that's it from Oscar Wilde, a ballad.
Of course, a ballad.
The Ballad of Reading Jail. How could it ever have escaped me? Why, you witch, you've even been reading from it on our honeymoon. But what part? What verse? What line? What was the line?
Don't take another step or I'll pull the trigger.
Give me the line, I say. I still can't think of the line.
Keep back or I'll shoot.
Oh, no, you won't.
One more step and I'll shoot.
Tell me that line or I'll kill you.
they love. Remember, Frank?
How's the next line go, Mrs. Clark? By all, let this be heard. So I heard. Too bad I was a little late.
Inspector Wade.
You know, ma'am, like I said, I only read one poem in my whole life. But ain't it the darndest thing? It happened to be the Ballad of Reading Jail.
Part. A honeymoon in the bridal suite. Red wine spilled on the table. Red blood on the floor as the clock strikes 12 for murder at midnight.
On Tuned to Yesterday from the 12th of July, 1946, a syndicated episode wrapping up this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for tuning in.